This is Digital Story Podcast number 914, September 26, 2023. Today's theme is, I don't care how great the iPhone is, I'm never selling my camera. I'm Derek Story. After spending the entire weekend setting up and testing the iPhone 15 Pro Max, I can report that it is a wonderful addition to my photography arsenal. There is an entire gear bag of goodies packed into that titanium package. So will it replace my X100V, my OM1, or my GFX100S? Not on your life. Find out why on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So yes, we're going to talk about cameras and smartphones both today. In fact, later on in the show, I'm going to talk about the upcoming Google Pixel 8. There's some good scuttlebutt on that. They released some information. And that phone is going to be released on October 4th. So lots of great smartphone stuff there. So you would think between the iPhone 15 Pro, the Google Pixel Pro, that we would just be chucking our cameras aside left and right and just walking around with our entire kit in our front pants pocket. But nothing could be further from the case. Absolutely not. And there are some very good reasons, most of which you're already thinking about or familiar with. However, I know some enthusiast photographers who have been quite successful just moving over to a smartphone camera and doing well. They're mainly heavy travelers and always on the road. And I will say for always on the road, that makes a certain amount of sense. However, my always on the road then would be just smaller interchangeable lens cameras or my X100V and my iPhone and my iPhone. Let me talk a little bit about what I like about the iPhone 15 Pro Max just for a second, and then I'm going to get into all the reasons why it cannot be, under any circumstance, my only camera. So one of the cool things that Apple did is they replaced that mute switch on the left side of the phone with something they call an action button, which was a very good move for all sorts of reasons. First of all, that switch that was there, I mean, its main function, in my opinion, was to capture lint from my pants pocket and trap it right there in that switch. I mean, so I never really got much use from it. I just sort of left it off. I wear an Apple Watch, so I'm notified if I get a text or a phone call or something. So that thing for me was basically useless. The action button, on the other hand, and I wrote an article about all of this that I put on medium.com on Live View. You should be familiar with it. I'm going to talk about it later in the show. But that action button actually made it so that I can hold the iPhone like a camera and use my thumb on the action button to take a picture and then slide my thumb over and do burst mode, because I reprogrammed the volume up button to do burst mode. And then I can even initiate movies with the action button. So now I don't have to tap on the screen anymore, and I can actually use my iPhone like a regular camera with a physical shutter button. This is definitely an improvement. And there are other improvements as well. So you'd be thinking that Apple is hitting its stride with serious photography, that the convenience of the iPhone would finally move enthusiasts to sell their cameras and go light. But that's just not going to happen. And I have five beginning reasons, not only reasons, but five beginning reasons why that isn't going to happen. Let's take a look at those right now. Let's start off with the electronic viewfinder. My mirrorless cameras have one. My iPhone does not. No matter how good that screen is, that LCD, or you know whatever it evolves into, it's still a screen in broad daylight. And it's still going to have all of the problems that screens have in broad daylight. An electronic viewfinder, which all of my mirrorless cameras have, I can look into it. It's like a little theater right there in my camera, and I can look in there. And I not only like the electronic viewfinder for composing shots, But when I'm out in nasty, contrasty light, I use it for reviewing photos. That I hit the play button and I'm looking through the electronic viewfinder, and I really can get a good feel for the quality of the shot, the color, the exposure, all that good stuff. Electronic viewfinders for me are absolutely essential. These days, I would not consider a camera that did not have a very nice electronic viewfinder. So right away, boom, there's a deal breaker right out of the chute. iPhones do not have electronic viewfinders. Second, physical controls. The action button on the iPhone is a huge step forward, no doubt about it. But it doesn't compare to the buttons and dials, and especially the dials on my other cameras. Now remember, I'm shooting with an Olympus OM1, OM system, OM1. I'm shooting with an X100D. I'm shooting with a GFX100S. So I'm already shooting with cameras that like dials and that feature a lot of them and cool buttons and all that stuff. I enjoy that. I like looking at the top of the camera and going, oh, okay, there's that, there's that, there's that. Click, 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 click. I'm ready to go. I think it's fun. I do. I really think it's fun. The iPhone, bless its heart, has a very good UI, very good layout, all that sort of stuff. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't make sense to put too many buttons on an iPhone. And of course, it makes no sense at all to try to put any sort of dial on one. So, physical controls. I love the action button on the iPhone. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Apple, for that. But at the end of the day, I want my other dials and buttons on my other cameras. Built-in tripod socket. You would think that this is a small thing until you start using the tripod socket for accessories, for tripods, for all sorts of stuff. It's just nice to have one built in. Now, I have a cool little MagSafe adapter for my iPhone. I wrote about it, quite a while ago, 2 years ago, I think. And I really do like it. It's terrific. Goes right on the back of the camera, has all sorts of different screw threads so that I can put just about anything into it. But even though it's easy, it's still an accessory I have to carry. I can't leave it on all the time because it makes the iPhone too thick. And it's on the back of the camera and not the bottom of the camera. You would think that's a small thing. No, that's a big thing, because now I need some sort of angled threaded thing, right? Like, for instance, when I'm going with my trekking pole, when I go hiking with my trekking pole, the little knob comes off. There's a tripod socket thing there. I can screw my camera into that and, ooh, I have a monopod just like that. I can't screw my iPhone into that without doing some other accessory, because unless I just want to take pictures of the sky, because the thing's going to be pointing up, or the other camera will be pointing down so I could take pictures of my shoes as well. So even with the accessory, I still need another accessory. My cameras, they have a built-in tripod socket, and it is in the right place. SD card storage. I like SD cards. I think they're kind of neat. They're relatively tough. They're small, but they're not too small. And I can have a card going with something in it, and then I can pull it out. I could put another card in. But the main thing that I like about SD cards compared to having only device backup, and that would be either in device or connected to the cloud, is that I have a physical card backup that I can put separate from the camera or the iPhone, whatever. I can put it separate on a trip when I'm traveling. Those SD cards are a form of backup for me, so I fill them up and I don't erase them, and I keep them somewhere separate from my camera, all that sort of stuff. And I'm backing up to the cloud too, so I'm doing all this stuff. I like the extra level of protection that I get with SD cards, and my cameras accept them and my iPhone doesn't. So it's another reason why I like my interchangeable lens cameras. Filters and accessories. Again, this seems like a small thing, right? Yes, I can get an adapter thingy bob for my iPhone and get filters in there. First of all, it looks kind of weird. I have to say. Not the best look in the world for my very handsome iPhone, but also then it's another thing that I have to attach, carry around, all that sort of stuff. Filters don't take up very much room just by themselves. I can put one in my top shirt pocket, and I can screw it directly into my X100V or the lenses on my OM1. No problem at all. And I just think it's easier. Plus, speaking of accessories, I love having an extra battery. I love having an extra battery just in case I totally go stupid and I run a battery down and forget to recharge it, or you know, any number of things that can happen. Extra batteries are fun. They don't take up much room, at least not with the cameras that I have. And they're another one of those things that I get with my cameras, but not my iPhone. That's sort of like the top five, and that's without even getting into how wonderful my cameras feel in my hand. An iPhone is an iPhone. Any smartphone is a smartphone. It's a rectangular thing that easily slips out of your hand. By the way, I got the new woven case for the iPhone 15. This case is taking a beating in the press right now. A lot of people are complaining about it. They feel like it scratches too easy or whatever. I know the CNET editor, he drug his nails down the back of one of his writer's case and left scratch marks in it. So then she wrote a nasty gram about it because it has scratch marks. And I'm just thinking, what kind of dude goes over and drags his nails through your iPhone case? I mean, that's not the kind of boss I want. But anyway, I have the black woven case. Apple moved to this. And they're moving away from leather. And so this was a substitute. I actually like it. It feels good. One of the problems I had with my 12 Pro Max was that I had it was a very good for protection. I had the plastic clear case on the back of it, the one made by Apple, because I got a blue phone and I wanted to be able to see the blue. So that case protected that phone from a number of drops. It did a great job. I also dropped it a lot because of the case. Like, it was a slippery fish, I'm telling you. And if I felt like it just jumped out of my hands at times. This woven case has a slight texture on the edges and then a nice kind of woven feel on the back. I think it feels great. I think it looks great. I don't have a problem with it. So you're going to hear a lot of stuff about that case that's not good, and probably rightly so, right? Because it's personal preference. Probably going to be the lone voice in the wilderness to say, I like the way it feels, and I haven't dropped my phone yet. So, okay. So there's that. I digress from how wonderful a real camera feels in the hands. If I pick up my OM-1, if I pick up the X100V, if I pick up the Fujifilm medium format, they feel great. I love that. I love the way real cameras feel in my hands. There's also like the physical benefits of a larger sensor. I mean, as wonderful as computational photography is, and oh my gosh, is it ever wonderful, a physical sensor is a physical sensor, and there are certain physics involved, and I like having a little bigger sensor in my other cameras. Color science. Now, Apple has started a little bit down the color science road. They've got some photo styles you can choose from now and all that. But it doesn't even come close to the color science as in any Fujifilm camera. I mean, that, my friend, is color science. And I love having that. And Fuji spent a lot of years, way before digital cameras, working on that stuff. All right. I kind of like tilting LCDs. In fact, I won't buy a camera now without a tilting LCD. The only way I can tilt the LCD on my iPhone is to tilt the whole phone. And when I do that, the darndest thing, the lens goes the same direction. So if I hold it over my head and point for a crowd shot, I can't see the screen. If I tilt the camera back over my head, holding it over my head so I can see the LCD, I'm taking pictures of clouds. The tilting LCD has to be independent of the camera lens. I like that on my cameras. I haven't even got into all this stuff, right? What else haven't I got into yet? Have you ever been interrupted on your OM-1 by a phone call in the middle of a shoot? Or a text message? right? No, you have not. I know for a fact you have not been interrupted by a phone call on your OM1, okay? All right. Bottom line on this, I like how cameras make me feel when I'm working. There's a real partnership there. It's like it takes the two of us together to make something beautiful. The iPhone will never, ever, never replace my working camera. I should say working cameras, right? But what it has done is become my backup camera, allowing me to travel even lighter than before, because now I don't have to carry two bodies, right? I'll carry whatever I'm using that day, you know, whichever camera body I'm using that day. And then I have the iPhone, now 15 Pro Max, in my pocket. And I feel very secure with that as a backup camera. So I can travel even lighter now. I have just the OM1 or the X100V in a tiny bag. And it's just fine. And it's a little bag, can fit under my jacket when I'm in public. You know, no one can even see what I'm carrying. Smartphones these days make excellent backup cameras. So the bottom line on this conversation about smartphone cameras is that they are an addition to my photography kit, not a substitution. 50 years of Billingham bags, the story. And I found this article on amateurphotographer.com, and I thought it was really interesting. I mean, first of all, if you've never held or worked with a Billingham bag, they are special. They are wonderful. The craftsmanship on them is superb. They have a classic design. They're really wonderful bags. And they're still available. They're still available. So this author on amateurphotographer.com actually goes through their entire history. And I thought it was pretty cool. So I'm going to read you the first paragraph of the article and the last paragraph of the article, just to give you a feel for it, and then you can use the link in the show notes to read the rest of it. The year 1973 was a good one for creating cultural icons. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon was released, and Roger Moore made his James Bond debut in Live and Let Die. Meanwhile, in the West Midlands, newly married young couple, Roz and Martin Billingham, decide to set up a business making bags to supplement the meager incomes from their lousy day jobs, and along the way created the world's most iconic camera bag. 50 years of the Billingham brand is still regarded as the Rolls-Royce of camera bags, exported worldwide and used by a who's who of the biggest names in photography. So how did it all start? So then they get into the whole story, which is really interesting. Lots of pictures. You get to see how stuff is made, which I always enjoy. You get to see pictures of the family, the principals, all that kind of stuff. And then we get to the closing paragraph here, which I'm going to read you right now. Despite the fact that they're now in their 70s and they have their co-director son, Harry, a safe pair of hands, Roz and Martin appear to still be enjoying themselves far too much to think about retiring. Quote, "Even after all these years, it's still nice to walk in and see the manufacturing process," beams Roz. "That's why we're still here, still working," Martin adds. "People always seem to need bags, and there isn't a perfect bag. So we have to keep designing and making lots of different ones. There are really only two types of bag. Too big or too small." I love that last line. It's so true. Any photographer will laugh and relate to that. All right. So anyway, it's just a really cool article. And if you're interested in Billingham bags specifically, I encourage you to read it. And if you're just interested in these types of stories, I think you will enjoy it as well. Google Pixel 8 new leaked promo video details new and improved camera features. And you can read this entire article on digitalcameraworld.com. Let me read you a little bit about this. It's flagship phone launch season, and hot on the heels of the new iPhone is the Google Pixel 8 and 8 Pro, due to launch on October 4th. Google has officially only released a basic teaser video for the upcoming phones on its Pixel 8 webpage, but a new, more detailed video showing what the new phones will have to offer has recently been leaked by a tipster. It reveals camera features like, and let's go into some of these, a new Pro mode exclusive to the Pixel 8 Pro. This will give users added control over more advanced camera settings, enabling greater photographic freedom. Night sight is back, so expect uncannily detailed low light images, even in almost complete darkness. Super res zoom, enabling 8x zoom with the Pixel 8 and 30x zoom for the 8 Pro. Real tone for improved color accuracy for lifelike, realistic skin tones. Magic Editor. This looks like a clever feature enabling you to switch faces in a photo with minimal effort. I kind of want to see that one, to tell you the truth. Okay, here's some specs for the Pro. And these are unconfirmed. Again, this is leaked material. We'll find out for sure on October 4th. Main camera, a 50 megapixel Samsung GN2 f1.68 aperture. The ultra-wide camera, a 64 megapixel Sony IMX787 with an f1.95 aperture. Telephoto camera, a 48 megapixel Samsung GM5 f2.8 aperture, 5x optical zoom, super res, zoom up to 30x. Front camera, 11 megapixel Samsung 3J1 dual phase detect AF f2.2 aperture, 95 degree field of view. Google may also be introducing new video capture features, including video boost, night sight for low light videos, audio eraser for reducing ambient background sounds, and improved skin tone rendition. We'll have to wait until October 4th for the official Pixel 8 reveal, but if these leaked details do turn out to be correct, the flagship phone fight between Google and Apple is going to be fierce. And there is nothing like great competition, Apple for Google and Google for Apple, and Samsung's got some pretty nice stuff too. Oh, and there's Huawei. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there in the smartphone category. I'm looking forward to see what Google reveals on October 4th. Setting up the iPhone 15 Pro for photographers. This is an article I just published on LiveView, and I have a free link in the show notes. You click on that link, and it is a free read of the article. Apple has made a few key refinements to the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max that are very photographer-friendly. These changes not only improve the camera's output, but also provide a better experience when taking pictures. In this article, I will first review the key settings that maximize the iPhone's imaging capabilities, and then show you the most efficient way to hold the camera and take pictures. So this is a setup article, step-by-step, lots of screenshots, lots of good stuff. And then I also, at the end of the article, I have some bonus content where I show comparisons, 24 millimeter, 28 millimeter, 35 millimeter, you know, all the way up to the 120 millimeter telephoto lens, all standing in the same spot, you know, so you can see the relationship of the different focal lengths with this camera. I show some close-up stuff. It's a fun article. It's very instructive. And if you're just getting your hands on the Pro or the Pro Max, I think you'll find this article very useful, get you off to a fast start, and then you can get out there and be taking pictures much faster than I did. Because I had to kind of figure all this stuff out. But anyway, and it is a free link, and the link is in the show notes. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to mention the Nimble Photographer newsletter comes out every Thursday. It is free, free, free. And it allows me to cover the stuff that happens after I record the podcast. I also publish things there that I don't publish in other places. It's just a terrific read. I keep it fast. It shows up in your inbox automatically. And all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com to subscribe. Go to digitalstory.com to subscribe. Or you can go to Substack itself and search for the Nimble Photographer newsletter and subscribe for free there every Thursday. I hope you're joining us. A big shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast and this community month in and month out. They have their own space over on Derek Story Online. Right now we have a number of things going on. They're talking about which smartphone that they're most interested in. You know, we've got the Google Pixel 8 coming out soon. We have the iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max just released. And we did a poll, and it's really interesting to see, you know, what this audience is most interested in, and then definitely what they're not interested in. And then just as interesting as the poll itself are the comments that follow the poll or that accompany the poll, where people are talking about why they chose what they chose, or why they're going to get what they're going to get, or why they're not going to get anything, right? And why they're just going to stand pat with what they have. We also have a photo challenge going, and then we have our usual banter, our usual photography banter. All of this in our Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and joining this group, I think you'll have a great time. All you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Just go to that Patreon tile, click on there. You can nose around a bit there, and then you can sign up there. Once you do, I'll send you a note greeting you. I'll send you an invite to our Inner Circle space. And you will be set up and rocking and rolling before you know it. And a huge thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. And finally, I'd like to thank our friends at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click on it, go over to our landing page there, nose around, see what's going on. And things that you will find when you go to their site, you'll find lots of printing paper, of course, as you would expect. You'll find lots of accessories for your printing. You'll find lots of information. You'll find some inspiration. And you'll find basically anything that you would want to know in the inkjet printing space, all in one stop at Red River Paper. They also have a Facebook page, and they have giveaways on their Facebook page, and they have community there. And, you know, they're really one of the few places I know that if you're interested in printing and you want to have some community and you want to have some support and you want to have some ideas and you want to find out what kind of paper you should get for the type of project that you're working on, I really can't think of a better resource than Red River Paper. You're going to get excited. You're going to buy a box of paper, and then you're going to go, why did I wait so long to start doing this? That's Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story, and a huge thanks to them for supporting this show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Working on more great stuff next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.